You're listening to The Cash Podcast, creating affluence, success, and happiness with your financial surgeon, Adam Koch, president and portfolio manager at Libertas Wealth Management Group at LibertasWealth.com.
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to do a little pre-intro here to this podcast, this episode. We had some technical difficulties that I'm going to take 100% responsibility for. We were recording this podcast, and I knew it was going to be a little longer than most, and I didn't want to look at myself the entire time, and I had no idea that when I turned off my self-view, that it was going to take my face out of the podcast. So for those of you who normally watch our podcasts on YouTube, my apologies, or you're welcome for not having to see my face the entire time. For those of you who listen, who listen on iTunes and other mediums, it's not going to affect you at all anyway. So this is a unique podcast, though. I've never done anything like it before in almost 100 episodes. These two guys reached out to me. They wanted to do an episode. They've got their own podcast called The Wonder Tour, and I didn't really know where it was going to go. So like I said, it's a longer podcast than normal, but we go over everything from talking about wisdom and money, self-improvement as people, as well as investors, long-term thinkers versus short-term thinkers when it comes to savings, even John Roach's Brobdingnagian bases and how they relate to wisdom and money. So this thing almost, I don't want to say intentionally, but it kind of goes off the rails in a bunch of different directions. It was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy listening to it and watching it as well. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got Derek Cobb and Drew Perreault with the Wonder Tour podcast. We're going to be talking about something a lot different, a little bit, something new here, at least on the Cash Podcast anyway. We're talking a lot about wisdom, leadership development, self-development, and we're going to try and figure out if it's possible how that we can tie this all into financial planning. So I don't think any of us really know how this is going to go today, but why don't we just go ahead and get started?
That's awesome. Thanks, Adam. My name is Derek. I've been doing this podcast with Drew for the past year, and my background is in computer engineering and software development and data science as well. So just a real full plate of all kinds of different stuff outside of this podcast, but we are just really excited to be here with you today to talk about wisdom and that link to really the financial planning. It's all connected. You're going to hear us say that a lot today.
Yeah.
So glad to be here.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for coming on, Drew.
I'm Drew Perreault. For the past, decade, been working in primarily business transformation, like Derek, in areas in data science, software development space. But really, my passion is to help people to become the best that they can be. And what we found is that self-development and leadership development are basically the exact same thing, because it really starts with us, where we have the control, and then but we just don't do it for ourselves, right? Because if we're becoming better for the good of ourselves, then, well, that's a really slippery slope. That's not wisdom. That's folly. So we've learned that we want to become better for the good of others. So that's really what I'm all about, is how can we always become more so that others can become more.
I think I get that. Yeah. Maybe let's start by elaborating a little bit more on that. Cause I think immediately when you first started talking, I started thinking about how I've always been one of these people that when I walk up to my friends, and we're having, intimate moments, maybe intimate's the wrong word, but we're hanging out and it's just, me and one friend, and we're having a drink and talking, I'll at a certain point maybe say, hey, where can I be a better friend, or how can I be a better person? And I like those moments of vulnerability where, you're asking your friend to be honest with you. And that's probably not a very easy thing to do, but it sounds like this is maybe something a little bit different. Am I misinterpreting that?
I mean, I do think that there's a lot of what you just said in what we do. And it does start with being uncomfortable. I'd say that's where it starts, Adam, is, and when do you want to jump into the cold pool, right? When do you want to get that shock? You've talked previously on your podcast about how, hey, we don't want to necessarily talk about our finances. Like, well, how much are you saving? Oh, I don't know. I don't want to talk about that right now. Maybe I don't want to talk about what the number is that I'm at. What is my number that I'm shooting for? I think that there's a lot of parallels there with your own character and your own development. Not only as yourself, but as a leader of other people. And We use leader very loosely because I think it's important to do so. I think a lot of times we think, oh, that's an executive. That's somebody who's out there in the front and they have to be the leader. You can lead one person.
Interesting.
Right, Drew?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's for us, it's about developing the wisdom to live rightly for other people. And that means that each of us has to see ourselves as a leader, right? And I love what you said, Derek, about Adam and how you're, to me, it seems you're more about the process, right? When I went back and listened to some of the previous episodes, it seems like you're not talking about specifics. You're talking about how do we think about these things? I think that's a tie-in to what we're talking about as well. We are looking at how do we think about these big concepts of how to live right? What is wisdom in the world? You know, what does compassion mean? What is integrity? These sort of things. But because it can be really ethereal to talk about those things, we found that it's really effective for us if we can draw on some popular media that people are comfortable with. So we literally started with Star Wars. We're like, all right, let's go back to the first Star Wars and let's use that as an example. Let's see what we can learn from that movie. And that was the jumping off point for us when we realized that humans love stories.
Oh, for
sure. If we're ever going to change, we have to tie it to stories.
Totally agree with that.
That's our resonance point. And so one of the things, it's still a little bit difficult to get people to jump into it. And so that's something that, you know, we continue to talk through with people and ask them, like, what is it that about this that, you know, we want you to talk about it more. How do you, you know, start to get that way? And I think we have the same problem. So, you know, going back to your conversation, what is your catalyst? I'm curious about that. How do you get somebody to jump into a conversation that's more vulnerable and that
sure.
kind of
thing? Well, first of all, they have to volunteer to put themselves in the seat in the office, right? I suppose that's the most difficult step is coming. It's not, a lot more Zoom these days than before, obviously before the pandemic, but even before the pandemic, we'd have Zoom meetings with clients around the country. But, you know, in say Central Ohio here, where we all live, it all starts with having the, I hate to call it courage, but I know a lot of people don't like the idea of coming into a sterile office or what is preconceived to be a sterile office space where you're going to, you know, sit across from some people in suits that are going to get all business on you. So, you know, for us, aside from the fact that I don't fit into my suits anymore, I plan to someday, but I'm working on it. But I think that it's starting with the easy questions, maybe inserting a little bit of comedy and loosening up and realizing that the reason why we're asking the questions that we're asking, which, you know, the first time we sit down with somebody is usually over 2 hours long and it's all questions about them. But that these questions, all of them have a purpose in the end. And the goal is to get everything that we need and leave no stones unturned so that we don't miss anything. And I use tons of analogies. And when it comes to that first kind of warming up, getting questions answered, getting to know the person on the other side of the table. It's like going to your family doctor for the first time. They have no idea who you are. They don't know what your surgical history is. They don't know what supplements you're taking, what medications you're taking, what you're allergic to. So they check your blood pressure. They check your reflexes. They get blood work usually. Yeah. And they ask about your family, you know, so it's kind of like that. But I would say, in our business, in the financial industry, I think we're stereotyped as being very technical. And unfortunately, those pieces have to remain. You know, you can't have a financial plan and you can't tell somebody whether or not they can make work optional at 60 unless you know the numbers, just a fact. But I think it's important to, at least here at our office, it's important to get to know our clients as if they're going to be extended family. So, you know, we want to know what their favorite TV show series are, what they binged on during the pandemic. We want to know. You know, if every day were Saturday, what would that look like? What would they do? You know, You know, we want to be able to hang out and kind of like we are right now, even though there's no real fire, maybe metaphorical campfire here. We want to be able to just hang out and have casual discussions and know that for that same reason, that if there's ever an issue, a problem, a nagging, like we just had somebody call or text me over the weekend with a very kind of dire question that was important to them. And we answer it, you know, it's not one of these things. Well, you know, we closed at 4 on Friday. Sorry. See you Monday. So I don't know. It's just more human, a human touch as opposed to like the business world. And I think a lot of that comes from just not wanting that myself from other businesses. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think that sticks out to what you're saying is that you say that it takes intention and you say that it takes time allocation.
Yes.
And the energy, right? Because when you're talking, it's not just a, well, it's 3:14. I got to go, right? It's that we've had an epiphany here, right? And I think that's really important to bring up. Drew, like, does that make you think about how we talk about the long game and about character's destiny quite a bit on the podcast? And I think there's a definite parallel here with the financial side of it, right? Because Adam's basically telling us every week, right? Your finances are your destiny in a way, right? Work optional is your destiny.
Yeah.
So
I think that's the first tie-in, right? Is let's unpack destiny, maybe. That's probably a good place to start. Because you pulled out this Heraclitus quote, right? The Greek from the, you know, 5th century BC. So when you pull that out, we got to unpack it a little bit, right? So when we talk about destiny, it just basically means like that's where we're going. When you talk about destiny in terms of humans, it's not some like fate-oriented thing. It's really like it's where we're going. And so when Heraclitus, at least to my understanding, said character is destiny, he was basically saying who you are and who you're becoming is who you will be, right? So I think that's also absolutely true in when it comes to managing your wealth, managing your future, is who you are and what you're doing is who you will be. There's no buts about that, right? Future you is just what present you is currently doing, basically. And if you do it over and over again, then you'll be able to develop in certain directions instead of just aimlessly wandering.
Like I said, people, we're gonna get deep here today.
Well, that's the tie-in, right? The point, though, is, and let's maybe pull in the first example here that we've brought, Derek, from Doctor Strange. So let's talk a little bit about the long game. So I always hear it in terms of, you know, taking the long view or playing the long game. But the idea is always that the further out of a viewpoint that you can take to a point, the better for you, usually. If you can divest yourself from the present and getting an immediate return on something, usually you can get a bigger return on it in the long run. So if that, let's pull that into the Doctor Strange example. So if you're not familiar with Doctor Strange, we'll give a slight recap here. We're not going to go through the whole movie, but Doctor Strange is a Disney movie that came out in 2017?
Not sure.
Yeah, I can't.
Ish. Pull it. Yeah.
Ish. That's 2016, 2017 range, somewhere
it's
in
a Marvel. Marvel movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. We got Benedict Cumberbatch playing the lead role. But the idea is that we have this incredible surgeon who loses his hands basically in a car accident, and he lived his entire life for himself up until that point. So after he loses his ability to do surgery with his hands, he goes and finds this dojo and learns the magical arts and becomes a sorcerer, basically. So he goes from being this surgeon to being this sorcerer. And of course, because it's a Marvel movie, there's this existential threat that is coming, and it is called Dormammu.
Those would be the macroeconomic trends.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. That's perfect.
Yeah, there's these macro trends that are coming for us. Inflation. For us all, right? There's no choice. You don't get to higher just rates. Like
Jerome yeah, Powell is that he is Jerome Powell, maybe. I don't know.
That's right. That's right. These are the parallels I'm talking about. It's exactly. All the same story.
Oh gosh, yeah. I don't know if Dormammu is equals to the Fed, but
Dormammu just got voted in for another 2 years, so another four year term.
Well, this is perfect then. Yeah, I love this example. Let's lean into the parallels here, right? Because how does Doctor Strange eventually defeat Dormammu? Well, it's great because we can hit two different things, right? So Dormammu is coming from outside of time. Dormammu is essentially this unstoppable force that is going to consume Doctor Strange's universe. So, right, he doesn't control that force. The only thing he can do is react to that force. So as essentially the two worlds overlap, and this Dormammu is coming from outside of time, is overlapping on Doctor Strange's universe. Don't get too caught up in the space-time that we're getting into here, unless you want to.
Unless you want to.
Footnote.
But as that's happening, Doctor Strange, so we didn't mention Doctor Strange has this arcane skill, right? He has this unique to him skill that he can manipulate time. So when something comes from outside of time, right, it seems inevitable. It seems like this is just going to crush me. That's it. I have no choice and it's going to crush me. But what does Doctor Strange do? He leverages his arcane skill. He has the green Infinity Stone, or he has the Eye of Agamotto, and he uses it to flip the script on Dormammu. While Dormammu thinks he's unstoppable, Doctor Strange uses the Eye of Agamotto to loop time on Dormammu and just continuously ram himself against Dormammu and die over and over and over again in just like increasingly gruesome ways. But what ends up happening is he creates a time loop. So he creates like a space in between five-dimensional time and four-dimensional time that is blocking the evil from totally consuming his space. So yeah,
now I'm going to jump back to the financial world, and I would say that this might feel a little bit like contrarian investing.
Sure.
As well as day trading, right? If you are literally just watching the volatility and playing volatility. And I know that's not necessarily the crowd here that, you know,
there's some people that listen to this podcast that wish I would do more technical stuff. I've really laid off the technical analysis lately. Well, I'd say lately in the last 9 months or so, but no, there's some people that like that stuff. I'm surprised you guys know you're talking over here volatility and dicks. Look at you. Okay.
Yeah, we like to surf around a little bit. I'm sure we could definitely learn a lot from another conversation with you sometime.
That's my true love is talking about the nerdy stuff that no one wants to hear about. You know, you do a podcast about, technical analysis and indicators affecting the long and medium term trends and, volatility spikes and, put call ratios that mark market bottoms and, you get a nice chunk of listeners, but then you do one on the five money love languages and you get hundreds of listeners. So it's like,
yeah,
nobody cares about the technicals, but no, it's that's interesting. I feel like maybe all of my clients need their own metaphorical infinity stone.
I think these metaphors are very helpful. I mean, if we go back to Dr. Strange, right? I mean, one of the things is that there were controls, there were ways to manipulate the situation that really weren't written down. They're not like they were against, SEC regulation or something like that, to kind of parallel the world again. But my point is that he was able to exploit something. And it really is the essence of good strategy is to kind of look at what everybody else is assuming is the case, right? Mm-hmm. And then you step outside of that and there's very much what we see in our everyday is that people really aren't considering that their character is their destiny. And so what happens when you start considering that your character is your destiny? Whoa, big, huge things are going to happen in your life. And I think you do mention that, as far as we want you to be more successful. This is the dimension that you are hitting on when you say that. And you do speak a lot to the growth mindset. I really do feel without saying growth mindset, you are saying be engaged in your life. We may hear that manifested today as the concept of mindfulness, but sometimes that concept gets a little bit, as Drew said earlier, ethereal, right? When we start thinking about, oh, it's yoga or it's meditation. Well, okay. Yeah, that is one maybe instance of it, but it really is caring about the moments of your life and realizing that these moments right now, and the moments 5 minutes from now, you're a different person. I mean, I hate to say that like that, but you could have a game-changing thought.
Sure.
4 minutes ago, right? Just totally transforms, right? Where your life is going.
I'll share one with you guys, actually. This is kind of ironic timing. So I always joke that I've never worked a day in my life, that for 21 years I've been doing this and it's all fun. Every day I love getting up. I love going to work. I love doing everything I do. I truly do. And that's a problem because when you like something that is also your work, it's hard to walk away from it. It's hard. And when I say walk away, I mean on a daily basis. There's always something I can get this done, especially when you're a business owner. I mean, you're building your baby, right? However ugly it might be.
My wife went to Mexico for a week. This is maybe 3 weeks ago, and it was for my sister's 40th birthday. And so I had the kids. I have two boys, by the way. It's they at the time they were 11 and 8. Now they're 12 and 8, about to be 12 and 9, two boys. And I'm always beating myself up about how I need to be a better dad and I need to be around the kids more. And the funny thing is, not funny, but I love spending time with them too. It's just, you know, you feel like, I think sometimes you're pulled in many directions. All of us are. You know, I'm pulled from my office by, you know, the people that I serve. I'm pulled by from my office by my staff. I'm pulled by my wife who wants my time, my kids who want my time. And then there's the home to-do list, the work to-do list. And it's just all this stuff's always coming at you all the time. And so I was forced for a week. I shouldn't say forced. That sounds terrible. But you get what I'm saying. I'm not saying forced from the standpoint of, you know, kicking and screaming. I allowed my wife to go to Mexico. That's not what I'm saying. But she went to Mexico. And it's like that week I worked every day from 10 to 3. Because I had to get the kids on the bus before I got to the office and I had to get them off the bus. And I had a little note on my calendar every day, pick up kids from bus. Don't forget, otherwise you'll be dad of the year, as a sarcastic reminder that don't forget to get your kids off the bus.
Yeah.
And with alarms everywhere. And after that, to make a long story short, after that week was over with and it was time to go back to the office in the normal way, I was like, I need more of this. Like this is, yeah, this is what I wish maybe I should have had this 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where I've got this experience of getting one-on-one time, not just for 4 hours, but for a whole week with my two kids to realize the things that we're all told by our mentors and parents and grandparents and seniors that say things like, when you're on your deathbed, you're not going to say you wish you would have worked a little longer. And then you laugh with them, but you don't change anything, right? I mean, yeah. and that coming back into the whole, you know, finance, I mean, this is all obviously wisdom, leadership, just and wisdom, self-awareness. I think that we just forget these things because we think too much about the long-term. I don't think, yeah, I think there's this unfortunate balance we need to keep between now and what I'm going to do in 5 minutes, what I'm going to do tomorrow, next week, and then what I'm going to do in 10 years. And I think maybe it's easy. It's like food, right? Everything in moderation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we think, yeah, if you can get to a point where you do think about the long term, but also the right now, that's where the leaders, and we want to develop leaders in that way, to work at the extremes, because the middle kind of works itself out. If you put the right things in and with the end mind that you're going to get those things out. And we do, we have in our, I will say, travels and journeys, we certainly do have our difficulties having people think about the effects of what they're doing right now in terms of strategy and vision, right?
Yeah.
And this is why we're so passionate about it, because we spent just a lot of our working years talking about these things and trying to get people excited about the effects that they're going to have on the middle. And you really just have to monitor the middle, but you have to have it in mind, right? And you have to know kind of what those next steps are, how they're going to play out. But that, what you were talking to there, and we appreciate you sharing that with us. One of the things we want to talk about next is kind of like this whole self-initiated disruption, I want to say, right? Where you, okay, you kind of take it upon yourself to notice that you have a bias. And I know Drew's, sure, got some things to say about that one for sure, because Drew is probably one of the ones that broke me out of that loop. I mean, it was great. I mean, I loved that moment. I think back to it and I was trying to coach him, like, you know, I think you're going to burn out. Like you need to pull back. And he's like, no, we need to go forward. You need to be more energetic about life. And you know, that, you know, we wake each other up. I mean, it's so true.
That's awesome. I was at a conference in Arizona recently. And one of the speakers, the keynotes, got up and said, you know, we need to stop asking people what keeps you up at night. And we need to start asking them what gets you up in the morning, because so much is framed around negativity and fear.
Yeah.
And instead, yeah, I think we need to worry about what gets us excited and what makes us happy. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
absolutely.
Drew, I'm curious. Let's kick us off here.
Yeah, I want to finish with one thing that you said, yeah, yeah, there, because that was a really good wrapper. And that's pretty much what we come to on Wonder Tour is that we create a model for something and we say, that's not the only model though. We need to understand things from multiple perspectives. We need to understand that most things are not binary. And so we can't just say, well, either it'll be this or it'll be that. Either I will take the long view and I will, you know, look at how much money I'll have when I'm dead, or I will take the short view and I will not care about that at all. And I'll just focus on having fun in the present, right? It's like you said, it's a blend of that. I love this quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, who says, our true home is the present moment. The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth in the present moment. That's that good. One's convicting for me.
That's good. It's like, I love quotes. I collect quotes. So, I, yeah.
Oh, okay. There you go. Perfect. I do too. I have a big quote file.
Me too. Yeah, that's good.
But it's so when we talk about taking the long view, right, it's to the point that we can pull it back into the present moment. The only purpose of looking into the future for me is so that we can pull it back into the present moment. I think, Derek, that's what you were talking to, right? Is how do we then make action out of it? Because human beings operate primarily in the past and the future, which are things that don't exist currently, right? The present is all that exists. So it's a little bit silly, like we talk about, that we spend so much time operating in the past and the future.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's, I'm not sure how far we want to go off into a tangent here, but I would say that the people who live in the moment too much are not, from a financial planning standpoint, are not very good savers. If they save at all, or if they don't put a lot of importance on the future, then it's just, you know, they'll just get another iPhone. And I'm not, you know, I know there's religions between iPhone and Android, so we're not going to talk about that today. As I, before I became an iSheep myself, I used to call them all iSheep. And here I am, one of the wolf in sheep's clothing. I don't know. I think that the long-term thinkers, on the other hand, they're the most interesting to me. The people who are really, really good at thinking long term are the best savers, and they're always chasing themselves 5 to 10 years from now. And I think their biggest problem. So where the people, where person A, the short term thinker, is not very good at saving, and they need to think more about their future. The person who's very long term, a very long term thinker, has a tendency to think way too much about the long term, running out of money, how much more they need to save. Spending very, very little, being very, very frugal, which is good. These are all good things, but there comes a point where this money isn't worth anything unless you spend it on something. And I'm gonna give the quote to who it deserves. I never sure who said this first, and he probably got it from somebody else too. But my good long term friend Colin Egbert said to me once, you know, money is a unit of choice. It's not the root of all evil. You know, wanting more money is not a bad thing, or saving more money is not bad, because money is just a unit of choice. And the more units you have, the more choices you have. And that's it. And whether you've gotten to the point where you've got so many units of choice that now you can just give those choices away so others can have choices. Or if you don't have enough and you need to save more, it's still just a unit of choice. That's all it is. So, but I do find it interesting that the difference in personality types, when you look at the long-term thinker who is constantly fearful of not having enough, but that's why they have enough. Does that make sense?
Yeah. There's some sort of a, and Derek, we talk about this, there's some sort of a net present value analysis that needs to be done, right, on things that are not strictly dollar signs. I think that's what you're kind of getting to when we talk to long-term people who are too anchored in the long-term, because it's not all about, you know, all that's going to go to nothing essentially in the end, or go to zero for you at least. And again, it isn't about, at least what I believe, it's not about me, it's about others. But if you can't be a strong influence in the present moment, just think about how your influence, now let's take it to the character development and the people development side. Think about how much influence that we can have in the present moment by being with somebody in a time that they need us to be with them, right? That compounding influence over time, it's harder to quantify. It's harder to forecast.
Possible,
but it's powerful. And I, you know, Derek, we talk about sometimes that this moment is just a moment for you, but somebody else, it can be their entire life. We've probably all had those moments in our lives,
yeah,
right? Where for that person, it was just another moment. But for you, you'll remember that moment forever as like a nexus point where things went one way or went another way. And so I would argue that, yeah, being too far anchored into the future prevents us more often than not from finding those opportunities in the present that don't necessarily have a good ROI or don't have a very certain ROI.
Right.
Totally. And I think that's where you get into this. Drew, you mentioned the potential bias towards making financial only thoughts and decisions, right? And where you have that, you have this bias that starts to self-reinforce. And that's really where we want to go, you know, a little bit in the conversation here, is to talk about some of these like self-reinforcing biases when you're talking about your own development, right? When you think about your own leadership and the way that you lead, you continue to reinforce that to yourself. If someone doesn't lovingly break you out of that, you could be too contrarian of an investor, for example, over the long period. You're always like, well, I'm always looking for this counterplay. I mean, commodities are going this way, so I'm going to sell commodities and I'm going to buy bonds, whatever. Yeah. You're going to reverse everything, right?
It's a terrible strategy, by the way.
Right. You can't constantly, right. It is a terrible. That's why
I was on Twitter. I tweeted something about how, you know, if you want to be a hero, well, you know, wait for whatever asset class, I said market, but wait for the market to bottom, you know, don't try to catch the falling knife, but wait for the market to bottom and start buying on the way up the hill, understanding you're not going to find the bottom, because the only people who pick bottoms are monkeys. You know, monkeys pick their bottoms. That's it. We shouldn't be picking our bottoms.
That's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, so we have to be catching ourselves, right? And I think that's one of the other reasons that we use stories in Wonder Tour, is that, you know, someone will see a movie or a story that they really like, and all of a sudden we find that there's a teachable opportunity for us to interject, right? And actually, it's funny because sometimes we use things that are funny. For example, The Office, right, Drew?
You want me to do a little bit of a setup here?
Yeah. Why don't you speak to some of that, like as far as, you know, what we kind of do with the Office there?
We don't just do movies. We don't just do Star Wars or Marvel. We like to go into really anything that has relevance in today, right? As long as, because it has to resonate with somebody, right? We can't just go and do, you know, our favorite comic book or something. That's not going to quite provide the benefit. So The Office, though, is one that we've noticed, right? It's one of the most popular TV shows of all time. We love to go in there because there's just such funny, but really inspiring dynamics between the characters. And sometimes the way that they inspire us is not in the positive sense. And we do always want to look on the positive side of things, but we can always flip the negative to be a positive as well. So The Office, I know, Adam, that you're not a huge Office fan yourself. So hopefully...
In my defense, it's not that I don't like it. I just never saw it. I understand that's a sin in itself. So
you're unbiased entirely about The Office,
though. It is, Adam. We will forgive that.
Eternal fire for me, I know.
Well, let's just do a quick recap. So we'll talk about Prince Family Paper. I think this is a pretty classic episode in terms of fans of The Office. Season 5, episode 13. In this episode, Michael Scott, right, he's the manager of Dunder Mifflin Paper in the Scranton office. Michael Scott, his boss gives him a mission to go and scout out this small mom and pop paper company called Prince Family Paper that's out in the boonies, right? There's not a lot going on out there. It's in a strip mall. So he goes out there and he brings his right-hand man, Dwight Schrute. There, you know, I'm sure you know of Michael and Dwight, even if you've never seen The Office.
For sure, yeah.
But so he brings his right-hand man, Dwight Schrute, and Dwight would love to think that he goes into everything with no bias at all, right? He's just like, I just see things for how they are.
Yeah.
And I just act on things based on, you know, I formulate my responses based on a perfect vision of reality. And Michael, on the other hand, Michael runs on emotions all the time, basically. So he knows he's biased and he rolls in with that bias each and every time. And so we love this moment here because you get to see both sides of it. So they go into this mom and pop shop. They got three total people working there. They got a man, they got his wife, and they got his son. Michael goes in first and he's pretending to be a lawyer who's looking for work, just to scout out this little company. So Michael gets his secret agent persona, Michael Scarn. He goes in and he is he's like thinking that he's going to be rolling over tables and going under laser beams and stuff like that. But in the end, he just ends up talking to this guy about a customer list. And because he's so over the top and attaches his feelings to this persona, he ends up giving away way too much information. Truly, he gives up the gig multiple times, but of course it's a show, so they never see through it. And then Dwight, on the other hand, comes in afterwards, and Dwight comes in, he's like, I want an interview. And they're like, you don't have any open positions. And Dwight's like, well, fire him. And he points to the guy's son. He's like, hire me, I'm better.
I'm your son now. That's
what I'm your son now.
I am your father. Yeah.
This is where the bias comes into it, right? So Dwight kind of walks into the situation making a number of assumptions. And I think we do this. We do this so much. We have certain models, certain viewpoints on our finances and our self-development. Self-development meaning, you know what? I'm going to read this specific author. If anything I've learned from Drew and you too, Adam, is that, you know, you've got to draw from a variety of sources, right? You have to draw from a diversity of sources. And this is just ways to disrupt yourself. If you don't, we can use Dwight as a model of kind of what not to become, because he makes a number of assumptions about the world. I'll give you a funny one, right? Dwight assumes that every moment is an unsafe moment, just about. The guy has nunchucks in his desk. He has all kinds of weapons stashed around the office, right? Because he doesn't know when he needs to leap into action as the sheriff's volunteer sheriff's deputy, right? He's going to stop the crime. And you know what? There's a couple times in the show where that plays out. And that's just statistics, right? But overall, his worldview, right? And his viewpoint is very biased towards a specific way of thinking. If we think, and you spoke to this actually in previous episodes on here, which is just, I know the world's a scary place, right? I understand that. There are certain things that are scary that are going on, but there's certain things that you just need to go and do it anyway. Push yourself, push through that, right? That bias, because, right, you let the emotions come in, right?
Yeah. One of the things I heard there too, which is interesting, there's so many behavioral and cognitive biases. And when it comes to money and emotions and, if Dwight has all these weapons cached up inside of his desk and 20 times that's completely unnecessary, that one time that it works, that's called confirmation bias. He's just been validated. He's just been validated. And in my world, that's, you know, somebody, you know, having a stock that they say it's going to come back. It's going to come back. It's going to come back. Crypto right now. It's going to come back. It's going to come back. It's going to come back. And then it bounces 10% in one day and says, see, it came back, you know, it's coming back.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. It's, you know, I bought Bitcoin at 50,000 and it's, you know, if it's at 45, so I'm going to sell it. I'll sell it if it gets below, you know, 42. And then then one day you just weren't paying attention. Now it's at 40. It's like, well, I'll wait till it gets back up to 42, then I'll sell it.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't get back to 42. Now it's at 38. So, well, I'll wait till it gets 40. When it gets back up to 40, I'll sell it.
Yeah.
And then it's down to 36. And you just keep changing it. And it's interesting. That's definitely parallels there.
Absolutely. And that's why we think that, you know, a lot of this is so applicable. And I don't know, Drew, what additional thoughts do you have on this bias topic? And I know you're like, probably just really like, you know, thinking something there.
Yeah. I've heard before humility-based investing, and I don't know if that's a loaded term that comes with other, you know, things as well. But the idea is that we could have a whole other podcast on probabilistic thinking. But again, things are not binary. And so better than other people at predicting them generally, right? In small, in narrow scope, I can be better when I have an information advantage. Yeah, for sure. We all can. But that's rare that you come into contact with that type of a specific scenario that's legal where you have an information advantage that you can leverage, right?
Sometimes illegal.
Yeah, exactly. To be humble in this space really means to remove our biases and to understand that we always have a bias. We always have a slant. Derek, we talked about how our background is primarily in data analytics, right? Business transformation. Well, of course, our slant is going to be towards companies that are strong in those areas. But does that mean that those companies have a great product? Does that mean that they have a good customer, you know, that they have a good understanding of their customers? Not necessarily, right? You can make great models, but that doesn't do anything over here. So that's just a very like surface level example. The biases run a whole lot deeper than that. I just think it's important that we, number one, try to take emotions out as much as possible from our
investments. It's so hard to do though. We had a client once back in the early 2000s whose dad was in World War II. And she said, look, I don't want to buy any foreign stocks. You know, she named specific countries, but just there's a bias there. We're not buying them. Sorry. No matter what we do, I'm not interested. We had another client who we found out when we did her risk assessment that she was comfortable. We do them from 199 miles an hour. It's a piece of software called Riskalyze, but it assigns a risk number based on a speed limit. So, you know, if you're driving 50, 55 miles an hour, so to speak, then that would be like a balanced investor. If you're in the 60s, 70s, that's moderate. Above 70, call it 75 and 80, you're on the brink of being an aggressive investor. So if you're driving 85 with your hair on fire, you know, you probably don't have a bond allocation, let's just say. And this particular individual came in saying, look, I don't like stocks, US international doesn't matter. I don't like real estate. Definitely don't like commodities. I just want to own bonds, safe stuff. And then we do the financial plan and we find out that in order for her to retire, she was 67 at the time, she wants to retire at 70. I said, well, I can't get you retired at 70. There's no way. I can get you to 72 if we give you what you need, not what you want, but what you need, then we can get you retired at 72 and not 70. If we do what you want, you're gonna retire at 76, but you're still go broke safely. You know, in other words, you're gonna be safely invested with all the comfort that you want right up until the day you're out of money, but you're still alive. So I think that these biases can get us in huge trouble, but at the same time, they're so difficult, I think, emotionally for people to put aside. Another one, I wouldn't call this a bias. I would call this I don't know what you would call this. Maybe you guys have a word for it, but I'll tell you the example. So we had somebody once who during the COVID crash said, I lost more money during the COVID crash than I did during 2007, 8, and 9 mortgage crisis. And my first question, of course, was, well, how much money did you have in 2007, 8, and 9? Because even though the COVID crash was relatively steep at 32% or 34%, it wasn't 57% like the mortgage crisis was when the S&P was down 57.8 from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. But if you have, I think one of the big biases that people have that kind of parlay into even more biases is thinking in terms of dollars and cents instead of in percentages. I think that when you have a $100,000 portfolio and someone teaches you, which is a fact, that the market goes down on average 14% per year, and that's normal, then you're going to be down $14,000 at some point that year within your $100,000 portfolio. Yeah. But when your portfolio grows to $1 million now, that means you're going to be down $140,000. And that's normal. That doesn't mean you need to start attributing how many years it took you to put that much into your mortgage. That doesn't mean that you need to think about how many cars that could buy or chai tea lattes or whatever your thing is. But that's what people do is they think in dollars and cents and they immediately start, like I said, this is turning into probably I'm going off the reservation, but they start attributing things to what that could buy. And so it's almost like the wealthier you get from a standpoint of money alone, the harder it is emotionally to deal with the fluctuations in that wealth because especially if you did it on your own, right? If you saved it all on your own, but emotions are honestly, I always joke, I've got a psychology and a finance degree. So I've got two majors. And I feel like I use the psychology degree more than I use the finance degree because you have to deal more with emotions are so important when it comes to money. You got maybe health for some people, maybe religion, then money. Those are the three most important. Well, family. Okay. Maybe I'm not wrong there. So in the top four, depending on current events and what's bothering people at the moment, money kind of goes up and down amongst that ranking of four things.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right on. It's the fact that, there is a bias towards one of those typically, and it can kind of overtake the others. And we want to have balance, right? I mean, the key here is to really have balance and to not, I would say, bias towards one or the other too much. And the only way you get there is to really disrupt yourself and be around people who are going to challenge you to be disrupted, right? They care enough about you to say, I'm going to break you out of this loop today. And I would say this is that I think one of the things that we emphasize that goes along with that is, you know, we'll go back to the Dwight example for a second. If you have such an ego like Dwight, right, you don't let yourself be disrupted. In fact, when you have those moments, you actually take them and turn them into more confrontations or conflicts, right? But if you let the defenses down and you say, this person cares about me, right? This is why they're saying this. Then you have that moment of humility, you know, going back to what Drew was saying, you know, have that humility mindset, right? It's not just in finances, right? It is in relationships.
Sure.
And you have the moment and you can actually capitalize on that, right? So you can grow in self-development when you have an investment strategy that's totally biased, as you're talking about, Adam, is like, you know, buy and hold forever or whatever it may be, right? Which is not a bad strategy. I mean, it can work. It can,
depends, right? Know, it's always the answer. It depends. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
exactly.
You want to have a diversity there, though. Like, if you want to have a little bit of risk, that may not be too bad of an idea, right? So, anyway, I'm not a financial guy, so no. I'm not giving advice here. I'm just stating some facts. But we can think the same thing in our self-development as well. Go out there and, you know, risk yourself a little bit in your self-development, right? And have a little bit of risk in your portfolio. Don't play totally to the bonds all the time and be over-biased to that, where you're just like, you're not getting any gains. You're not gaining as a leader. You're not gaining as a leader of your family. You're not gaining as a leader in your company, because you honestly maybe don't think that that is in the cards for you. But that's just you saying that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that the bias that you know, it keeps you there? So, and that's that reinforcement loop.
Yeah, okay, negative self-talk too.
Yeah.
Something you said earlier just made me think of what my dad put in my wedding card when I got married, and what I put in everybody else's wedding card whenever I go to a wedding. Listen twice as much as you talk and always be the first to admit you're wrong. And I think that's not just true for weddings and married relationships, but for all relationships. Just to be self-aware and not to have to be so stubborn and your biases, and whether that's an opinion or a discussion you're having right now, right?
Just I think we have a good, there's a classic quote for that, right? That's misattributed to John Maynard Keynes. When the facts change, I change my mind, right? That is the mark of a good investor and a good leader, is that as soon as new information is provided to you and you have a high degree of either, sometimes it's a high degree of certainty in that information, it's a reputable source, whatever it is, right? It should be time to change our minds. But what we know, and you know probably better than I do, Adam, is that in human psychology, that is not, it seems intuitive that when facts change, I change my mind. But actually, human beings get very anchored to previous points of view on things and struggle to get further and further away from how. So like you said, that's what causes a lot of marriage conflict is, well, I started here, so I can't go all the way over to here, even when the facts have changed.
Right. It's terrible. I'm sure you see it with friends, you know, family. It's tough. It's tough to watch. If you're somebody who, I always like to say, somebody who's a deep thinker, who really like has these conversations and reflects. But that Keynes quote, by the way, is one of my favorites of all time. Because so I'm a market technician, CMT, and I have this sandbox I play in on Twitter, which is like 42 other technical analysts. And you'll see that quote posted at least once a month. I mean, and maybe more, because I'm not on Twitter constantly, but nothing could be more important than looking at a situation, whether we're talking about your financial plan, your portfolio, a relationship you have with somebody, something you're doing at work, a goal you have for the future to get promoted or change jobs. Nothing could be more true than doing the analysis to determine what it is you want to do initially. But then if the facts change, changing your mind, because we live in this world of probabilities, not certainties. And there's this whole long game we were talking about earlier. I'm sure you two see this too, but there's certain people who maybe they struggle so much and they don't even know it, that it's because they have this idea that they can control everything out into the next 10 years. And instead, you kind of have to, you know, you have to roll with the punches. You have to, you know, I don't know, live like a UFC fighter. And, you don't know what the guy across from you is going to do or the girl across from you is going to do. But no, I think that in the money world anyway, I deal with that quote every single day because, you know, whenever I have this joke that maybe I should just buy stocks that go up. I never really thought about it till now, but I guess I'll just buy the ones that go up from now on. I never thought about just avoiding the ones that go down. Right. But we don't know which ones are going down in the future. And if we did, I wouldn't have a job. First of all, I'd be looking for work, but you have to be willing to change your mind. Otherwise you end up becoming anchored to use your words, Derek, or dragging yourself down with this investment that you've now married yourself to, you know, yeah. Because it's got to come back. You know, I shop there every day. You know, it's got to come back on my wallet alone.
Well, I think go ahead, Derek.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think a good way that we do on the Wonder Tour to figure out, to get ourselves out of that mindset, because again, even for the most well-adjusted growth mindset people, it's kind of hard to imagine things differently than how they play out. So there's the positive and the negative side of how things can play out, right? I can say that I think it's going to go a certain way and it does go a certain way and it pays out for me. And so that one is really hard to think in the negative. It's really easy to pat ourselves on the back and be like, oh yeah, I was right about that. But what we do is we call it what if, right? We're riffing off of what Marvel does with what if, and we think like, what if things went completely differently? And it brings that humility that you need that says, what if that didn't pay out? How would that have changed things, right? What if I was wrong about how that played out? How would that have changed me? And I think going through that what if, just like when you're driving a car, right? When you're driving a car down the street, like one of the best pieces of advice that I ever got when I was learning how to drive is always be asking what if, mm-hmm. right? What if that semi moves lanes on me here? What if this car goes on red? Things like that. It teaches you to think humbly and probabilistically about how things are going to happen instead of deterministically and thinking, okay, well, they'll just follow the rules. It'll just happen as I'm imagining that it's going to happen.
Some people call that anxiety.
Nice.
So that, I'm glad you brought that in there, Drew. That's really good.
Our next episode, we'll be comparing medications to different types of biases.
That's awesome. Sorry, Adam, you were saying something.
I can't remember. It's fine. No worries. No, I think all I was saying was just that there's so many biases that, you know, we have to be willing to be flexible and nimble. And I think the people who are the most nimble win in the end. When I say win, I don't mean there are no losers unless you choose to lose. But but when I say win, I mean, you know, people who, you know, when we're talking like right now, like what I'm hearing all the time and just using current events is, you know, this Ukraine thing, you know, it's just, you know, things are going to keep getting worse. We're going to go into recession. The market's going to crash. It's like, really? It's because if you know that, I'll pay you whatever you want to work here. And then I'll just short the market then, you know, you just tell me what your price is. but of course they don't know. And I don't know. Nobody knows. I mean, we have to, we're dealing with probabilities here. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of evidence. More evidence than not that we're closer to a bottom than we are to the beginning of this thing. But that doesn't mean Dave Keller, I'll give him this quote because I think he's the one that said it. But Dave Keller with stockcharts.com says, never misinterpret the bottom of the page with support, meaning it can go lower. just because the stock charts at the bottom of the page doesn't mean, you know, the X line is zero. We could be looking at 400, right?
That's why there's penny stocks in delisting.
Well, I love that, sure. Though. The scope of view on a chart is perfect example, right? Derek, we talk about, you know, what scope are you looking at? Because really the narrower you go or in your scope, then maybe the easier it will be to predict, right? If I'm trying to predict the weather tomorrow, I can do so with a higher probability than I can do next year. Predicting the weather next month, it's very much like predicting the markets next month, sure. Right? It's so complex, it's almost impossible. Sure. You're only able to get macro trends there. But the further out you go and the higher the level, the estimate that you make is, like you said, yeah, will we eventually go back up? Well, in the long term, yes.
Yeah.
Now, how long term, right? That determines your strategy. But so finding those sweet spots of scope and figuring out, okay, when can I kind of like sit at this? I can go up a little bit in scope, down a little bit in scope, find the right sweet spot where I can start to make predictions that I feel, again, not that I'm going to be right necessarily, but that I have a higher chance of being right than being wrong.
Sure. And I think you hit a huge point in my world on that note, because there's a guy named Charlie Bilello. He does these funny, sometimes they're funny stats, but just, he does a lot of statistical research. And he had this one come out the other day. I don't know how much you guys watch CNBC. I would encourage no one to watch. I shouldn't say that. I wouldn't watch CNBC. We call it financial pornography. But he talks about how starting in 2010, when CNBC started doing this episode, whenever the markets are really, really volatile and scary, it's called Markets in Turmoil. And it's not scheduled. It's just a pop-up show that comes on when the markets are in turmoil, according to them. And the statistic is, and it's a perfect indicator for the market. Every time there's been a markets in turmoil, and I don't know how many there's been. If I had to guess, there's probably been 60, 70, maybe 80 episodes. Every single time the market's higher a year later. Every time. So I think, Drew, what you were saying, I'm trying to remember exactly what you said, but I mean, I think that so many times that my job is very difficult in that I think people want to know. And I think that's the way that's not just in money, but in life. And that's where it's hard to make decisions sometimes because we want to know what the outcome is going to be before we do it. So we don't make a mistake. Right. However, unless you're 65 years old and you've barely saved enough to retire, which you shouldn't have done to begin with, by the way, unless you're that person, you shouldn't really worry too much about what's going to happen in the next 6 months or the next year in the market. You should be focused back, go back to the long-term again, right? We should be focused more on the long-term, realizing that the S&P 500 has been down 17%. The NASDAQ's been down almost 30%. The chances of it going lower are not, I wouldn't say small. It can go lower, right? So you could get a better sale if you're waiting for that clearance sale. But again, we're back to picking bottoms again. And we're worrying too much about the short-term. When I always say, you know, any couple or individual should have anywhere between 3 to 6 months of their expenses and savings at any time. And then above and beyond that, if you have any money that you plan on spending in the next 2 years, that shouldn't be invested either. So if we're living by those rules, why are we worried about the price today, right? Because as you got, well, I think Drew, you were alluding to this, but the market has an upward bias. So, you know, there's 3 out of 4 years, the market goes up. And when you're in one of those tough years, well, it's ironic because, you know, people say all the time, like, well, you know, I don't want to invest, but I got a bunch of cash. I don't want to invest it because this market's too high. I don't want to pay this high price. I'm going to wait for things to, come down. Then I'm going to invest my money. Then you get an opportunity like this one this year, right? Well, I want to wait for things to get better before I invest, which means you want to wait for prices to get higher. So I'm in the only business in the world. I get this from Don Connolly, one of my first mentors ever in the business. He said, I'm in the only business in the world where when the prices go down, no one wants to give us money. But when the prices go up, people throw money at us. It's like the anti-sale. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's the bias thing. It's a different type of bias, right? But you're talking about how we are biased towards the present and towards recency. I mean, it really is a piece of a recency bias there. I love John Steinbeck and East of Eden. He just has some of these incredible quotes in here. He says, and it never failed that during the dry years, the people forgot about the rich years. And during the wet years, they lost all memory of the dry years. It was always that way.
That's right. It's right. Recency bias all day long. And we always want what we can't have.
100%. And I think that's where we kind of dovetail into this like other topic that we were thinking about for today, which is expectations, right? And we started expectations, but really it revolves around your growth rate, right? It's what are your gains going to be, right? Your expectation of your gains, you may have a percentage in your mind, right? It could be 7%. It could be 8%, whatever that may be, right? Mm-hmm. We all have these expectations. And I think it's interesting is maybe once you break these biases, you break out of these biases and you start to see the entire picture, there's the other scary extreme, right? Which is you can grow, you think you can grow so fast, right? We've seen some of this with crypto, right? Where someone says, well, you know what? I got my entire nest egg. I'm just going to throw it all in there, right? Or something like that. And I start cringing as soon as I hear that. I'm like, you may just want to like, maybe just do a couple thousand or something, you know, just to see how it goes. Or
We had a guy in our office last year who had came in with a $1.4 million portfolio, all invested in Amazon, Microsoft, Netflix, and Tesla. That was it. $1.4 million.
Yeah. And that percentage of market cap right there by those top companies, it makes me uncomfortable knowing that there's so much of the market that is in those top companies.
Sure.
And they're great companies. They're strong companies. We use them. But I don't know that I want to bet my entire portfolio on those, you know, right on FANG or whatever it may be of the week. Because you know as well as I do, there's going to be some other top companies. I know we're kind of getting into maybe a dominant market where they're $1 trillion market caps. Like, how could they even go away? But regulators could get them, right?
So yeah.
Anything can happen. But, you know, as we think about, the self-development angle, and one of the things that Drew and I, we looked at is that there is a limit to how you can grow yourself, right? And so that's why it's important to, as you say, Adam, get started today, right? Get going on this journey for financial health. Well, we would also say that in terms of self-development.
Why would you say there's a limit? I'm curious. I've never even fathomed that concept.
That's a good question. So the main thing is that in a day's time, you can only read so many blog articles. In a day's time, you can only absorb so many things. And because the sun comes up, the sun goes down, and you have to sleep. And, you know, we've talked about kind of the time constraints on everybody to be able to do that. Don't expect too much of yourself. That's the thing that we try to tell people is that, look, it's great to grow and you need to, but we advocate for a steady growth, something that's doable, right? That's not going to totally outstrip you to where you're like, I have to make structural changes in my life so I can continue to grow. Because I've been there. I've definitely pulled a lot of information in. You drink from the fire hose, for example. You can only drink from the fire hose for so long. What I mean by that, right, is just take huge amount of information. I'm sure if we were in the room with you and went into additional financial topics, I'm sure we'd be drinking from the fire hose and I would walk out of the room like, literally, my brain is smoked, right? Drew,
yeah.
You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
I want to tie it back to one thing, which is organic life has a growth rate to it. So just like in investing, right, there are certain different growth rates. There are standard trends that you can look at and you can say, okay, well, things don't usually go exponential, or, you know, when they, you know, if they do, they go exponential plus log and stuff like that, right? So you're starting to see these different patterns, basically. So what we've noticed is that it seems like there are laws written on the universe for humans and for organic life that you can't grow faster than, you know, time and energy allows. Like Derek, you gave the time example. I would also give the energy example, right? Because yeah, we grow from books and things like that. We all love that, but we primarily grow from experiences, and your experiences are going to be, I would argue, more tied to your energy than they are to your time. You can only grow so fast. We pull in the example of Pinocchio, right? This is like the second most translated book of all time, a pretty, you know, pretty ubiquitous story. But if you think back, most people have probably seen the movie to the, you know, 1938 or whatever movie it is, 1941, something in that range, Disney movie, Pinocchio, right? He's this puppet who's alive. He walks out and Geppetto tells him to go to school. The first thing he runs into is the fox named Honest John. And Honest John's like, you know, Pinocchio's carrying his book. And Honest John's there with his like bozo cat friend. And they're like, you don't have to go to school. You can just go into showbiz. There's a shortcut, basically. Right. And it's like you were talking about, one person wanted to not take, you know, any kind of a shortcut. They were like, no, we'll just invest only in bonds. It'll be fine. Right. We'll be highly protected. But on the flip side of it, a super aggressive profile is not the best either.
Yeah, like waiting for the winning lottery ticket. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to the point where it's like, you may as well just, like, if you, for example, if you're going to put everything in tech stocks, like, you may as well just be gambling on sports and paying experts to gamble on sports at this point, because like their gains are going to be just as good and just as risky, basically, as you are going into a non-diverse portfolio that's heavily focused into one area. So I think we've just noticed that there are different growth rates, and it's never possible to exactly pin them. But because there is a limit to your growth as a person, and of course also your portfolio growth, it's critical that we understand how do we react to that. Okay, so we talked about this earlier, but for me, one of the big things is we focus more on the process than we do on the immediate results. Because in personal development, it's easy to be like, well, I read a book and I'm not changed, or I went to counseling and I'm not changed, right? But that's not the barometer here. The barometer is long-term growth. Its character is destiny. And so we have to keep at it. We have to keep focused on the fact that like the growth happens incrementally each day, and it's not necessarily going to be measurable or discernible.
Would you argue that then the focus needs to be more on the activity that you're doing on a daily basis and less on the outcome?
Exactly. It's not, outcomes lead to bias, right? Yep. If you just look strictly at the outcomes, it leads to bias. But if you focus on your process, you can say, that investment didn't pan out. Maybe I learned something from it. I've done my reflection, my analysis, but I would make that investment again sometimes. You can say, because some people, like you said, you probably have plenty of examples, I'm sure, where they've been burned once and they're like, no, we can't go back there. And you're like, but where's your humility? You got burned once, but you were smart in what you were doing. It doesn't mean that it was bad.
Right. Again, there's probably one of my favorite ways to get rid of bias was one of my many mentors. He said that whenever you look to buy an investment, you should put your hand over the name of it first. Just look at the trend. It shouldn't matter what it is. I mean, if you see an uptrend and then you take your hand off and it happens to be sugar commodities, is there something wrong with sugar? I mean, people sure do eat a lot of it. I mean,
well, that's what I think is so funny about. Yeah, I think commodities are a great example where you're in those and you're out of those. You're in those, you're out of those. And what's changing is, you know, do we need it or not? Right. And is there a good supply of it? That kind of thing. I mean, yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I thought it was funny, you know, because Drew and I, we get so deep into this. And honestly, we talk about it so much. And when you ask, like, hey, what I never heard that there's an organic growth rate limitation, right? And it even forced me for a second to think, wait a minute, I've become biased to thinking about that. Yes, there is one. Of course there is one. But
it has to be. Makes sense.
This helps so much for us.
I suffer
right?
from it. I mean, this is what my big takeaway from you two so far today is this. Aside from work, it's knowing that I'm always trying to, I want to be this never ending dry sponge that wants to just continue absorbing. And there comes a point of saturation, I think, or oversaturation, where you just can't take anything else in, at least temporarily, until you got to let that sponge dry out a little bit.
Well, I think I think that's a great point, Adam. And it's okay, right? I mean, we have to dial our expectations in constantly. And to be, you know, as we've kind of layered on here, we've taken the long game, we've looked at character as destiny, we've looked at our biases, right? And naturally going to expectations next is really that, as Drew was saying, that's the day-to-day, and you said it too, Adam, is that's that day-to-day process where the funny thing is about this, the focusing more on activity, right, is that we're not in control of it so much. We have to kind of let it happen. And a lot of it is the subconscious making sense of what is happening around us. And we have to give that time, right? And when you drink from the fire hose, you're going to pull in all kinds of things that you may not necessarily have the conscious connections to. So I'm very much like, I'll talk to Drew about something, you know, we'll go heavy into a conversation. And then I'll be like, you know what? I got to go to sleep. I just got to like think about this tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, investing's like that too, I think too, you know, where you have something that you're really weighing heavily and you've looked at a lot of different charts today. You've looked at a lot of different macro trends and projections and whatnot. But really, there's only so much research you can do in one day where you've got to back away from it. And you've just got to say, you know what? There's obviously a limit here. I'm hitting the ceiling on this. And I've got to just give myself time to kind of sort this out.
That's almost honestly, like a daily limit, you know? There's almost like two limits. There's the lifetime limit and then I guess the short-term limit.
Right. I would not recommend listening to podcasts all the time. Go ahead, Drew.
Oh, I would argue there's many more. That's the crazy thing, right? It's just like the complexity of the limits is really indiscernible. But to know that there are limits and to gauge yourself on those limits is what I've learned to be successful. So I'll pull a John Cleese example here. John Cleese, a screenwriter, wrote A Fish Called Wanda and a number of other things, right? But he talked about how when he was learning to write scripts, he at one point wrote a really great comedy sketch and he loved it. But then when he went to find it the next day, he couldn't find it and it was gone. And he was like, oh, crap, I spent the whole day yesterday writing this. And he worked so hard on it and he was up late and stuff. And then he ended up having to, he looked for it for a while and he ended up having to rewrite it. And when he rewrote it, he was really happy with it and he performed it and it did really well. And I think it was in college or something, this story, and with the audience. And eventually, of course, he found the original script again. And when he found the original script, he compared it to the new one that he rewrote from scratch without being able to read the original. And he noted that the new script was significantly better than the old script, right? And his takeaway from that, again, we have to be careful because this is not an experiment, this is an observation, but his takeaway was that my subconscious learned things from writing it the first time. And not only that, it learned things from sleeping on it. It learned things from searching for it and thinking about it a lot. And once it had processed, it had taken time to process and wrote it again, it came to a much better conclusion. So yeah, sometimes when we hit that cap, and like you said, Derek, yeah, that's one of my strategies. I do hit that cap probably 2 or 3 days a week when my brain becomes foggy. And at that point I stop. No more reading, no more listening to audiobooks, no more working. It's done basically. I need to process now. It's like literally like I have a backlog a mile long that my subconscious is going to have to process of all this stuff. And once it gets caught up on the backlog, probably tomorrow morning, we can start afresh.
I always say back before I was so busy at work and then back before kids, I still have a music studio in my basement. And then the analogy that comes to mind is I would build a song, like I'd build a track up and I'd finish it. And I'd think I was finished anyway. And I would listen to the song, just keep listening to it. Or maybe there was a piece in the bridge where I'm trying to finalize it and I can't quite get it. And it's like the best thing to do is just walk away for a week or two. And because you've just reached the limit, like your rubber band is as stretched as it's going to get, and avoid breaking that rubber band, I suppose. Probably best to just give it a break. Have you two read the book, The Four Agreements?
I don't think so. No. I've never read that one.
I have it.
Some of the stuff you're talking about, really.
I'm struggling to recall it. It's probably been a decade.
No, it's all right. I'm on audiobook reader as well, or I guess listener, Drew. So you mentioned audiobooks earlier. For some reason, I don't focus very well when I'm reading paper or like a Kindle. I'd rather be listening with a laptop taking notes. I know it sounds crazy, but or in my car. But this book, The Four Agreements, talks a lot about, you know, don't assume anything is one of the agreements, you know, never make assumptions. And then I'd have to look up what all four of them are. But it's a really, really cool book that I think talks a lot to what you guys are talking about when it comes to self-development and self-awareness and reflection, which I don't think any of us could stand to do, you know, less of, that's for sure.
It makes the world a better place, right? And I know it sounds trite. It sounds a little trite.
It's true, though.
We're like, oh, we want to make the world a better place. But yeah, we do want to make the world a better place. We were here to do our work, right? We have work that we're doing. And this is some work that we do, right? This is our contribution. But if there's anything that someone could take away and that could benefit them, that's what we're all about. That's the main thing, right? For the good of others. That really is a pursuit in the podcast. And we recently finished our 50th episode. This was a good milestone for us. We were pretty excited about it. And we've been unpacking this word. We pulled it out of, I think Drew pulled it out of some philosophy book, really, in his pursuits, right? He ran across this word and it stuck out to him. But the word is magnanimous. And it's not a word that you hear in your everyday. I would say if you looked for search trends, I would say it's, you know, the middling type search trend. It's not like an exponential or it's probably one of those words that kind of plateaued out because somebody used it in a book or whatever it may be. But we are unpacking what that means. And really, as a kind and giving leader, it's someone with a deep soul, right? And the dictionary strains to define the word because there's so much attached to it. And so that's what we've been pursuing in the first 50 episodes. And then the second 50 episodes, we're really fitting that into this whole character is destiny thing, right? And how that drives our growth as leaders.
Have you two ever heard the word Brobdingnagian?
Do it one more time.
Well, no, yeah.
Brobdingnagian.
No, I have never heard
There's
that
a guy named John Roque, technical analyst, one of the best, in my opinion, in the country, in the world. And he has these things he calls Brobdingnagian bases, which are giant bases. And I thought, you know, being philosophical, you know, such deep thinkers, you two need to start using that word.
Yeah.
You didn't already. Because giant proportions, you know. So
you're gonna have to send me the spelling on that one. So we'll have to get that from you after.
Yeah, it looks like it's from a book. From a book from the 18th century here.
Gulliver's Travels. Yeah.
That's crazy. Okay. So it's all about there you go. It's satirical novel. It's from Gulliver's Travels. Yeah. So I'm assuming it has to do with a lot of uncertainty and complexity in the vastness.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
That's awesome. We'll take that one forward for sure.
I'll unpack that a lot more.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just something little seed for later, I guess. But
100%. Hey man, we're always looking to be disruptive with this.
Yeah.
We really do feel like, you know, when you know, I want to let Drew riff on a little bit here, but it really is. There are a lot of connections to be made, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm taking away from today is that we definitely have a lot of connections between financial, right? The financial mindset and the self-development mindset. There's a lot there, right? There's a lot of cross connections, but
if we were to profile people, those who are very mature, for lack of a better word, in their personal development and self-awareness, I would bet those same people tend to do very well in the world of saving and retirement planning. I don't know, but I bet that would be the case. So I think that, you know, we both go on our own parallel journeys here to, you know, whether it's helping people become better leaders, better people, affecting others around them in a more positive way. And I'm over here, you know, trying to get people to help themselves from the standpoint of, you know, quitting when they like to have the choice to quit working so they can actually do something with this money that means a whole lot more than making it. I think that we ought to do this again sometime and kind of maybe break these down into some smaller topics even. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
But I think Drew, weren't you going to share a story?
I'll instead of sharing a story, I had a story on the docket, but we'll pivot a little bit. This is the Wonder Tour formula. We never know where it's going to go when we get started. That's kind of the secret sauce, is that we have some ideas, but we let it go where it goes. I would prefer to spend the time riffing on what Derek said and really trying to come to a close on what you said, Adam. I'm not here to help someone become better so that they can become better. I'm here to help someone become better because I have a vision for a world that's flourishing, a world where people care about each other. They take care of each other. They look out for someone. Classic definition of love that I really just have latched onto. M. Scott Peck, in his, you know, seminal work, The Road Less Traveled, that Derek, I'll give you credit for pointing me in that direction. I love that. And I've read a lot of other Peck books as well, but he said that love is putting somebody else's spiritual development or, you know, sense of purpose ahead of your own. And so if there's one thing that I want to kind of wrap this into, it's that we can't be doing this for ourselves. We simply can't be doing this for ourselves because it's futile. In the end, you know, we're going to be born and we're going to die. And what are we going to be left with? Right? Money, like you said, I love what you said there, right? Money can help. Money can allow you. It is a currency for change, essentially, right? In different ways. So we can use it to make changes, but it will be no good without character, right? If your wealth exceeds your character, oh gosh, that's, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. If you've got, you know, twice as much money as you have character, that can be, you've already got one foot in the grave, some might say, basically, because it's just going to be, you're not going to be happy. You're not going to leave an impact on the world the way that you had imagined it, right? And so I guess if we're looking at that, and we're looking at ourselves in the mirror, and we don't think our wealth and character are in alignment, that's okay, right? You're only at where you're at. There are people that are there to help you. You can help yourself.
Sure.
but let's start out by talking about it. Let's start out by finding people who are trying to go the same direction as us and learning from each other. And in doing so, you get all this other stuff wrapped up into one, right? It's, you get financial advice, you get, you know, you get friends, you get relationships, you get family, all these things, you know, they don't have to be exclusive. I pursue one or I pursue the other, all of these things in balance towards, you know, the end goal of leaving a legacy.
I mean, I that's totally the way I would have said it, right? I mean, okay. I think that that, you know, Drew and I, if you can't tell from this entire episode, is that we have a similar way of thinking, but we also have a divergent way of thinking. And I think that's what kind of helps us work through things. If I were the same as Drew or Drew was the same as me, I think it would be boring. I think if we were all the same, it'd be boring, man. Right?
Tell me about it. Yeah.
And, you know, I want to say we really appreciate you having us on today and providing that, just the I would say the glue to pull it all together, right? To really bring it to what you want your audience to hear. Right. And the message that you want to resonate coming out from your podcast. I think we may have started where we thought maybe there was a lot more disparity, but I feel like we have a lot more parity.
I would agree with that
in the end. So
I would agree with cool. that. I depending on, you know, what we can talk later, but I mean, I think there's questions I have, and there's things that I might find really interesting if we did this again sometime. And how about this? I'll start by teasing the question. I would argue, and we're not going to talk about this today because we're out of time. I would argue that the first problem with trying to accomplish the things that the two of you and Wonder Tours aimed at is that people, tell me if I'm wrong. Well, no, maybe we can't talk about it today. I think that people are inherently selfish. And I think the word selfish has a very negative connotation. But when I say selfish, I think that when somebody does something, whether if it's for themselves, then obviously it's selfish, right? It's selfishly motivated. But I would argue that a lot of times, if not most times, when people do things for others, they're also doing it for their own self-fulfillment. It makes them feel good to do it. Something I think that would be interesting to talk about another time, and we can see if there's parallels in the financial world maybe, is the difficulty in getting over that hump. And then more importantly, when you get to a point where you're thinking about it, you're being conscious, you used the word earlier, Derek, you said mindful, you know, bringing it to the front of your brain and thinking about being reflective and becoming better for whoever you want to be, then how to do it. Which I think for, there's lots of people I know somebody right now I'm thinking of, I won't say their name, who I know they want to be, you know, be a better influence on their friends and their community. But they don't know how. I've had a couple short conversations with this person about how, some ideas, but then those ideas become very overwhelming. But anyway, I don't know if you want to chime on that before we close.
Oh, too much. Yeah. I've got way too much to say. Yeah. I agree with you in theory that humans are generally, I would add to being selfish, motivated by immediate gratification. Uh-huh. So it's the combination of those two. Again, I'll leave the stub here. I have personally defined adult development as being learning to be more focused on the future than on the present. And so you can meet a lot of people that have a lot of years that haven't been able to figure that out yet, that I need right. to be more focused on the future than on the present. And I don't, when I say that again, notice that there's paradoxes here. We talked about we need to be focused on the present. Well, we also need to be focused on the future, right? It's having an right. understanding of both of those things. So yeah, let's pick that up another time. I've actually got a great idea for how we can tackle that.
Perfect. It sounds good. Well, what I'm going to take away from today is the concept of not pushing so hard, steady growth as opposed to Mach 3 growth. Not, you know, understanding we can only learn and become so much. So for me, maybe I just need me to spend a little bit more time being. How's that?
Ooh, I've had to tell myself that, Adam. So I'm with you there. Yeah. There's a time and place for fire hose for sure. But, you can't do it all the time.
Before we close, can you two tell us, you know, about just for our listeners where they can find your podcast?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Your website. Yeah. Yeah. So our website is www.wondertourpodcast.com. And you can also find us on all major podcast platforms by just searching one word together, Wonder Tour. and you'll be able to pop up. And that's one of the reasons that we wanted to have our logo there, so that you could recognize it when it popped up. And so it shows up there. And again, we've got, we're just starting a compassion series this week. So we're really excited about that one.
Fun.
Very much trying to unpack that term of compassion, which I think is one that I think is looked over in the modern day world, right?
Yeah.
Where we previously, you know, we're talking about empathy a lot, right? And just like how compassion is like this next step. And going through that with somebody, going through tough things with somebody, but not necessarily that they can do anything for you when you're doing that with them. So Drew has taught me a lot about compassion. I laugh because I'm like, I know that Drew could probably talk another 10 minutes in this episode, but we'll leave it at that. And we'll just kind of drop that there. And yeah, it starts at episode 51 with the compassion series. So awesome. We're really excited for it and excited for people to listen to it as well. So thanks again for having us on, Adam.
Oh, for sure. No, and if you would like to hear more about personal development, leadership development, self-awareness, wisdom, just becoming a better person, definitely go check out Drew and Derek's podcast. I know I'm going to be going back and subscribing myself. So, but we're going to go ahead and end. So that's it for today's show. Be sure to share this episode with your friends and family if you think they would benefit. And if you'd like to discuss your personal financial situation better, remember that remember you never have to be a client to ask a question. So if you'd like to set up an intro call, email us at info@libertaswealth.com or head over to our website at libertaswealth.com. Be the first to watch or listen to these episodes by subscribing both on iTunes and YouTube. And don't forget, if you head over to libertaswealth.com, you can sign up to not only get these updates, but also all of our other screencast videos, articles delivered directly to your inbox whenever they're released. Feel free to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/libertaswealth. I'm also on Twitter at Adam Koch and Instagram at Financial Surgeon. And as I always say, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of podcasts out there, and you chose to give ours a listen today. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Cash Podcast with your financial surgeon, Adam Koch. To see any charts or images that were mentioned in this show, or to check out additional articles, videos, and other educational resources, head over to LibertasWealth.com.